Got horses run?
What?
Yep, go to the race every day.
Oh, it's a dirty job, but somebody has to have it.
You have to stand in line and play bet?
No, not really, that's pretty easy to find. Here we go. There is another horse to watch, but unfortunately, we have no sense in this group adding. We added it yesterday. Look at the last race now, this adjusts now to fast two, doesn't it? Which means that Summer Glow runs fast two. And in all honesty, I liked Summer Glow in here, and I put her on top of Bold Arrogance and boxed them. And I bet Summer Glow, and I should not have won this race. Bold Arrogance was the best horse in this race. And I should have gotten the exact on the other end of Boston I went to. Okay, Summer Glow had it set up for her perfectly, and she ran good. But Bold Arrogance was the best horse in this race.
It's fast one.
She runs fast one, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Now, even if she hadn't run fast one, I want you to look at something. Watch the running style in this race. Double the Charm takes the lead. Bold Arrogance has to run with her all the way through the three quarter and then draws out on the field around the turn and gets beat in the closing strides by Summer Glow. Now, look at the fractions down at the bottom of your page. These are $25,000 females, right? 46 and 2 is her half mile. Now, remember, even though it's only the first call in our numbers, a half a mile in a mile race is half the race, right? In this race, it's close to half the race when you get that, which means that that's a long way into the race that horse is still competing in 46 and 2 against another horse. Look at the fractions in the Dance for Lee race. These are older horses, non-winners and ones, and they run 47 and 2, and she runs 5 full lengths faster than the half. The sensational seventh race, the Good Taste race, is run in what? 46 and 1, and they traditionally run a little faster in the mile than they do in a mile and 16th. So she ran to the half as well as that bunch did. Now look what happened to her down the stretch. She manages to draw out after all of that. And what does she do to the rest of the field, excluding Summer Glow, who benefited from that pace loop? She draws away from the whole field, as does Double the Charm. So she draws away from the rest of the field. But folks, that's a sensational performance. Because she ran, if you consider the difference between a mile and a half mile and a mile and a 16th half mile, she ran as good as Great Negotiator and Good Taste. And Great Negotiator came back and won a big third the other day in a race that he had no chance from the 10 post. So now what does this tell you about Bold Arrogance? It's a terrific race. Now we made this point yesterday only to find out today she ran yesterday in a little stranger circumstance, but nevertheless, she's on the horses to watch this for both of these class, so they think, boy, they did all right today. We got one winner. I mean, 23 losers, maybe one winner. But she paid $27 yesterday, the loser of the turf course. And before you question, Jesus, that's a big class jump from 25,000 to 80. Let me tell you something about that class jump. If you're familiar with racing and have been for a while, you understand that the turf racing, those prices are inflated some years. So it's not as big as it looks. And if you recall, a horse called Parson John, who was running around here for a while, he went out of $10,000 races and was competitive in non-winners once on the turf, wasn't he? In fact, he won one of those almost immediately after he moved out of the $10,000 on the dirt. They are inflated to start with. Plus, there's a guy by the name of Don Luby that trains this horse. He's a top-notch trainer. He thinks the horse can run in here on the turf. Gary Stevens, who has his pick of mounts these days, decides to go along for the ride. And his agent, Jeff Franklin, could have easily put him on something they thought was a little more live. So you got that little bit supporting you. Plus, you got his horse to watch. That will not come up number one on your fingers here. But
he did come
this
up,
race was sensational.
He did come up decently on the figures, though. And he happened to fit, I keep a place model on the turf, he fit that TT.
Okay. Plus, you're getting 10 to 1 on this horse.
That's right. He paid $10 to place.
If you're getting 3 to 2 on this horse, you can say, geez, that's a big negative. The class jump and the turf course, I won't touch that. It's 3 to 2. There's too many negatives. But 10 to 1, you got to reevaluate that stance. So, I mean, it's too late to put on a horse to watch this because now it's already won at that $80,000 level. You can see it back at 25.
The only thing I noticed about Bold Arrogance, and I wanted to ask you about this, that horse had run or set the fastest pace in the race. How does that pace transfer to the turf course?
Funny you should ask that.
We did this yesterday,
and it depends on when Howard wants to do it, because it's now 1 o'clock.
Why don't we finish that question?
You want that question now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Piece of cake. Even though I lost Schmidt here, I guess he decided that he didn't want to do this.
Oh, that's very good. Very good.
You can tell somebody's socks are burning. I smell something.
It's Jay's lunch. Incidentally, you can tell that Schmidt did some work on this board, because what he meant to say is that when I started yawning yesterday.
Oh.
That's when I was speaking, though, so it's understandable.
Now let me tell you how you're going to do this for yourself also, on any turf course versus any dirt course.
Yes. Just ask one question.
Do I get to answer the question first?
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Steve. You want to ask?
You play it on your own horses to watch list in here. You just play the first time they run back or the second time as well.
Depends on the circumstances. I normally play them a couple of times. You know, one of the horses we're going to come across in a few moments is a horse called Jacqueline and Hyde. Did I set out as a horse to watch?
Yeah.
Well, when I came back, I didn't play it. I didn't put a nickel on it. Is it not? They won a $16,000 race very easily. They had it in for 32 in a race that it had no chance of getting near the lead. But it still ran very gamely, and I'll show you that in a moment. But I didn't touch the horse in that race. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the next start is the first start for the horse. Okay. I'm gonna give you. Let's go back to the original sheet and take the non-winners of one. All right. Let's look at the non-winners of one par on the dirt course. That par is 111-1, 143-3, right?
Oh, dirt.
Yeah, 111-1, 143-3. That's on the part-time chart. Now let's take a look, and don't write in the variant number because it's going to be a little different than the one you've got here. Let's now take a look at the pars that I have for the turf course on page one. The very next page, just flip the page. Non-winners of one par on the turf course at Santa Anita is 111-4, 149. With your trusty variant program, put some numbers up. And the first one is 8.5, 111 and 1, 143 and 3. Now your variant program is going to call for beaten lengths. Now, from your understanding of your racetrack, you have to understand where a horse has to be at the second call to win on that particular race and surface, right? And at Santa Anita, they've had to be about 2 lengths behind, haven't they, in a route, at the second call. So now we're going to put 2 lengths in here, 0 for final, of course, no adjustment, so that you get some numbers here. The first number you get is the percent energy is 51.77, which is just about on the nut for Santa Anita, as the ideal energy, not that it doesn't fluctuate. 51.77. For second call, you get 55.33. Now that's the average winning race on the dirt at Santa Anita. Second call, 55.33. That's the two call. On the turf course, 9, 111 and 4, 149, 0. You can do this for any class level as long as you have a par from each. All you have to do it for one class level, because then you have the field for the whole thing. Second call beaten lengths on the turf course. What do you think it's been?
3.
About 3. It was about 1.5 or 2, and then several horses like Lightsaber distorted
that, right?
Orange
County.
So now you got 3. So let's use 3. Now this one says percent energy of 50.32. SH. If you want to find a second call very easily, just type in SH enter. If you happen to have one of the Synergism or one of the newer programs, that'll give you your second call, or you can compute it just with a calculator. 54.73 is that second call. for the average winner. Now, you tell me about the question you asked earlier about the turf course. Anybody? What is the difference? What's the difference in percent early between the dirt and the turf?
1.45.
Okay, so now you've got a horse on the, you've got a horse that has shown an ability to run on the dirt, and he's coming off of the turf to this time now. And the dirt race is some time ago. But you have a reasonable feeling the horse can run on the dirt course, right? And his energy comes up 50.66 off the turf course. Now that tells you that as you compare it to 51.77, he's going to be just about right on the dirt course, isn't he? Because that's the difference between the two courses, not the horse himself. Because right now, if you put six horses into your computer, three off the dirt course, three off the dirt course, 19 out of 20 times, the three off the dirt course will be the top three early, and the three off the turf course will be the top three late. But that ain't necessarily the way that race is going to go. Okay, so if you have a horse that ran 50.32 or higher on the turf course, it's a good chance he'll meet your parameters on the dirt course. If the horse is running 51.33 on the turf dirt course, a very good chance he'll transfer to the turf course. Second call. If you want to do a little bit with pencil and paper on your numbers after you've got it, you just have to be aware that the difference in the second call between those two courses is about 0.6. And that way you can kind of figure out where the horses are going to be, because your computer, if you just put them in as dirt and turf, your computer is going to say these turf horses are going to be 7 lengths behind the second call, when in actuality, they may be right on the leader. Okay, go ahead.
But my variant program just gives me the feet per second. Let's say it's from the second ball. What do you just give me feet per second?
You have to calculate it.
You have to.
What? You know how many feet there are on the second call. You know how to get a second call.
That's why I say, if you can get it out of your little computer, fine. If you can't, take a calculator. 3960 divided by in lengths and so on. Okay.
What do you say you have to punch on your 1360?
Well, probably S in the variant program. Yeah. Punch in S H. Enter.
Yeah, but you're only doing this once, so doing it by hand is not a hardship.
No, yeah, you don't do this all the time. But once you have this, you know the difference between the two courses.
On that one program I got from Dick, that's what that 55. It gives three figures there, and on the other one, it gives two.
One's an energy. One is energy.
Yeah,
one's an approximation of overscan energy. It's not exact.
Okay. And that's how you compare the two horses. Now, if the horse is running significantly under this number on the turf course, it's a very good bet he's not going to run well on the dirt course. He's going to get too far behind. But if he's running about this number, there's a good chance he'll run that number on the dirt course, because they run differently in the dirt versus turf. But that's your basic comparison between those two courses. Everybody understand that? Does anybody not understand it that wants to understand it? Okay. You don't. Okay. Do we have more than one? Because otherwise we'll address it individually.
In other words, as long as your horse can be within early percentage, 1.45 either way, you'll handle dirt or turf, right?
No. Nope. Potentially he will.
Okay. Well, that's,
okay. Yeah. Because then you have to, if the horse hasn't run on the dirt before, now you have to say, is he going to handle the dirt, period? Just because his numbers happen to be right on his, that's a tricky call. And you can be right part of the time, and you're going to be wrong part of the time.
None of those horses has won yet in Feminita, including the really good ones last week.
You'll get a look now on Political Ambition. Because if he transfers his turf course race to the Stroop Stakes, he's going to be a tough competitor in there. Yeah?
Does this... Can you do this with the downhill versus a standard sprint, or is that so screwy that there's...
Of course you can.
Well, you can. Okay.
It's the same principle.
But what? You know, that course is so screwy sometimes.
Because for one thing, the par down the hill is about 44 flat or 43.4 to the half. So you do the same thing, and you say, because what happens is you take a horse down the hill, and you move him into a race with a horse that's been sprinting on the dirt. He's number one early, right? Except his running style may not be anywhere near that.
Right.
That's how you do the same thing. That's
okay.
What does that 60 translate to as far as one stone?
Let me ask you, what does it transfer to? You're supposed to know this now. So I'm going to ask you, and we're going to do it together if we have to.
Thanks, Howard.
Four.
What was the question?
What is it transferring to?
Okay. Any more questions on that one? Who asked that question anyway?
Tom Hamilton.
Oh, that's figures.
Why?
The guy that knows the answer always asks the question.
Sorry, yesterday's class, we went through the same thing. The same question came up.
60 is equivalent to a 22.
No, it's 0.60.
It's 0.60 on a route.
Oh.
0.60. Second call on a route is at 6 Fremont.
By the way, Bold Arrogance went 113 yesterday. No wonder he came home like a trooper.
Yeah. You got a chance to control this, which that was a big price, too. I mean, as long as you can, you can get $22 on a horse that you made a horse to watch. It's a nice value.
If you're doing this in some track where you don't have these part times, you really average up second calls of the two different surfaces or distances or whatever, and just wait and average.
I'll leave it up all during lunch.
I think that's a place.
But just on that scale, in as much as the turf horses will still have a balance and sustain, though, as you said, more often than not, they'll be 1, 2, and 3 sustained versus 1, 3, 2, and 3 versus the dirt horse. Is there any way to actually physically adjust the number that you punch in?
No. Don't punch them in. Do it after you finish with it.
Well, Factor W will be okay. That'll still be good.
Factor W will be okay. Then, what you want to do with your printout, you may want to go back, because I do this, all right? You may want to go into it and say, I'm going to make this turf horse 0.60 better at the second call, and I'll have to adjust sustain the same way. Okay? So that you're going to have to understand that they may not be running 4, 5, and 6th in that 6-horse field,
right,
as opposed to 1, 2, 3.
So if you give them the 4 lengths at the second call, then you might get more.
But I'd adjust, not so much, I wouldn't even fool around with the sustain rating. I'd adjust the second call rating.
Okay.
But once you figure out where he's going to be at the second call, you know whether he's got a chance or not.
Be cautious about making adjustments.
Yeah.
What you just want to do is you want to intellectually understand what's happening here, that you don't really have horses that are 50.32 on the dirt, because they're not going to be. One of the horses that we did in a class a little over a year ago, remember we did some races down at Del Mar, we did about a home card or 8 races, some other stuff. Anyway, we had a horse called Lino. It was moving from the turf onto the dirt, and we made that point there. This horse, even though it shows 50.2, it's going to be much higher number on the dirt. Of course, it was.
You're entering that dirt line. Would you adjust his second call time by 4 lengths?
Nope. Yeah. So you would do that intellectually or with pencil paper after your opening. Or, if you're brave, do it before you start. Just be aware that once you tamper with those, you have to stand and receive them, whatever you get.
Yeah.
I often tamper with
let's meet back here at 2:30. And there are 15 levels of class here. Subtracting the 56, just go to the sprints or look at any of them. In the sprints, there is a 1.52 difference between $10,000 claimers and stakes raising. At 6.5 furlongs, 1.38. The greatest difference is between 7 furlongs, where that longer chute has a lot to do with this, but it's 1.7. Total difference. 1.38 at 8.5, 1.42 at a mile, 1.43 at 9 furlongs. You divide those numbers by 15 and you'll find that at sprints you have a 0.10 differential between class levels. The route's about a 0.085 average. 0.09 if you want to stretch it out. If you were to take stakes away from there, it would get down to considerably less. If you were to note the difference between maiden and maiden claiming, which is 0.69, you would notice that it got less and less. So the 0.08, which we for many, many years used as a differential, since all class levels are theoretically based on about a second to rest with .08 is, holds up whether or not you are doing it the way we arrived at it in factor analysis or whether you do it this way. So it points out two things. It tells you that if you're going to make that class adjustment, .08 is a good ballpark figure to use for class level. If you're using your class as par, if you're using it as numerical earnings factor, it's an entirely different matter. Now, Ed over here, who's a longtime horse player, recently turned handicapper and statistician, is doing a follow-up survey on Dick Schmidt's class analysis and his revised class formula. And Ed, you want to stand up and give us 45 seconds, a minute, just on what you found so far?
Right here? Okay.
Yeah, your voice will carry into our special microphone set up for you. It's been Ernie's lunch.
What I did do was, when Dick announced it, I think at the meeting last July, it came in on the follow-up. I was kind of intrigued by it because I myself have been doing something similar to it, but not quite as sophisticated. So recently I set it up on a spreadsheet, and some of you people may know Dick Mitchell. I coordinated with Mitchell on the idea, could I use something as little as 100 races, so long as baseline ABV and earnings per race stayed within one standard deviation. Does everybody follow me there?
Say you do.
Yeah.
At this point, it's coming out so well, it's a little bit frightening. Taking the top three indiscriminately, in other words, if you were making a $6 bet, betting your top three, you're showing a 50% profit on investment. You're doing no handicapping whatsoever. So it's a very, very strong indicator. The top five are approximately 96%.
Talk about the class factor as opposed to the ABV. Which one?
New class
factor. The new class factor.
This is the new class factor.
You're not putting it in your computer, and you just the top three as it comes. As you do every horse in the race, you take the top three. Is that what you're saying?
Well, whatever you want to look at, top one, top two, top three. In other words, you keep statistics on each one of them.
As a spreadsheet, it'll give you any delineation you want to make it. From one to five.
Is anybody lost on that? This is what a spreadsheet can look like for you. In other words, simply the date, the race, the name of the horse. I also, different from the group, I use fourths and fifths. I give a higher value to fifths because if a horse has a lot of fourths and fifths in there, it's also reflected in his purse. And if you throw those in there, you will drop the horse's APV. And so a lot of times the horse will end up, because of these, if you don't put the fourths and fifths in there, a much higher APV than I feel they deserve. The next thing, when I get my thing, and I'll give the results to the group. What I'm going to do is arbitrarily increase the value of thirds, fourths, and fifths. Almost up to place. You follow the reasoning?
Yes.
Because we are interested in horses that win and place, primarily. So now it may not do a thing. I don't know. But that's the power of the spreadsheet. Once you put it in, all you have to do is change your formula, and automatically the figures just instantaneously adjust. You don't have to retype it.
When you enter the earnings for the horse, do you adjust it by? If it's a foreign horse racing here for the first
time.
No! Just take it as is.
No, he's just taking facts. He's not doing any interpretation of facts or swaying the facts. He's taking a basic statistical analysis.
Wow.
Just as the facts lay and not warping.
As I told the gentleman, I'm not using anything under 16,000 because I'm any races under 16,000. I'm on the Southern California circuit. And because when I started with the group, that was Tom's parameter at the on his model that he did not like to play, maybe just like under 16,000. So that's what I'm using right now. If it comes out successful, I'll go back and do maybe 20 races on the jumpers.
I did about 150 races up at Bay Meadows. And, well, I was doing all the races. But the cheap one, you know, it wasn't very valuable there. But there was a big variance in terms of the percentage depending on the number of horses in the race, naturally. You know, the top five winning eight, you know, the percentage of winners in the top five depended very greatly on the number of horses. There's a lot less when there's 12 horses as opposed to 6, for example.
Yeah, an average of the number of horses that are in the race versus the top three, sorry. So no. You know what, you know, that was a question of when.
Yeah, it's a weighted impact value. And I know that
one thing he did teach was that were there only 5 horses in the race, or only 6 horses in the race, he would...
Well, you can do it easy enough because it prints out the name of each horse on one. Yes. The one area in the country that I have gotten less than glowing reports on this thing is from the Bay Area. And one guy who did a study over there of almost 700 races said it's the long acre shippers that are screwing out. And if you, in almost every case, if he just went and did the races without any long acre shippers in them, he was hitting 90%. And it's those shippers that are coming down for the last couple of years in droves that are skewing that bench. But they just don't have the average purse value. And that's so that's just something, local knowledge, is there's no formula that's going to replace local knowledge. You're going to have to know things. Just like here, you're going to have to know that a high class figure that was earned at Caliente probably is not worth it.
You won't get a high class.
32. No, it might very well. A horse that went 2 for 2 in Caliente will get a very respectable.
Oh, they get 100%, yeah.
Because they'll have 100% in the money percentage.
Is he doing non-winners?
Yeah, so, he'll have a fairly good number.
He's doing non-winners?
He's doing 16,000 up.
Oh, that, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 16,000 up.
Is that the top three of the top of the 5 you pick, or? Top three of all horses in the race?
Every horse in the race, are you not? Putting in every horse in the race.
Not necessarily, Howard, but I can look at it. I'm familiar enough with the figures. If I know the horse isn't going to come in anywhere near the top five, I leave them out, that's all.
If there's
any doubt in my mind, yeah, I'll run 8 or 9 horses.
All the way to grade ones?
Yep.
Well, when you say not
grade ones,
what are your figures?
Great ones have a tendency to distort very bad.
10 to 12 to 1 to 4. No. What's your overall number?
Well, I haven't read it to add it up.
Oh, when you add it up.
I just write them down as I go. Bouncing around really bad.
So this is affecting me more than in the contenders.
Well, I'd say you're throwing out what, 1 or 2 horses at risk, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not just contenders. He's saying, why throw this foreign horse that has no rating, could possibly have no rating at all in, or the Caliente horse who, you know, he's making small adjustments, generally speaking.
No, it's good. You're doing every horse in the race. You're just not. I mean, the ones you're excluding are horses that wouldn't be in the top three anyway, right? So you're effectively representing every horse in the race.
And I might do something like this. You know, very, very occasionally, it's a sprint race. Every horse in the race but one are all sprinters. This horse's entire income has come from, you know, routing, and especially a mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter. He might have a respectable dollar amount there. I just throw him out, and I haven't been wrong yet. I mean, that horse hasn't even, you know, taken fifth to run up the track.
You did say this was using the new class mark.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
This is holding true down Caliente too.
Oh yeah, it's the cheaper the track. In my experience has been the more true it is.
And I've got, for instance, the 6 furlong. The class level is the number 3rd one, the number 6 one, the number 2, the number 8, the number 6, number 2, the number 9,
three, seven, two, three. That's bouncing around pretty fast.
Well, you know, one thing that I was running into something similar to this, and what I found was horses that hadn't run in 6 months or a year were really messing me up. And at that period of time, I found that there was a tremendous amount of horses coming back from long layoffs. When I threw those out, like the fifth and what had been the fifth and sixth were when.
Give me off your list. How many were six and over?
Five out of 11 that I was this on the sheet.
That's a mighty short sample, but may I suggest that you come up here and let me talk to you about how you're doing it, because I have never had 11 races where I was that good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just running them on the.
I know. I would like to. Let me just see
for
if
you're right.
I mean, if you don't want to.
What class levels were they too?
That's fine.
What class levels were the real low ones? Were they lightly raced horses, by any chance?
Well, 9, 9, 9, well, I don't know. I have to look back on 9, because I just keep the date, the race, back to WPS, BFP, and APP class.
Were you giving us a class or any either?
Oh, class is what I gave
you. Okay.
If it doesn't, you know, it's like anything else. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it.
Well, yesterday did 11 races, and only 7 of the 11 were in the top 5, and he decided to stop doing it because it wasn't working. So I don't think, you know, he still had 7 of them that were.
I still calculate it because it helps me not to overlook a horse that is higher in class than the rest and may have bad running lines. Once I stop figured it on lightly raced maidens and taking a closer look at horses that had long layoffs, I missed 1 out of 20 being in the top 5.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
That's more realistic because my 90% number was generated blind in every race. And I didn't even bother to add them up until I had almost 250. And now my number is based on a sample of around 700 races.
Well, for instance, the ninth race yesterday, Video Kid won the ninth race. He was fourth.
No, you're doing it wrong. He was number one. That I do know. He was number
one
class horse.
He was fourth because that's in the top 5.
Well, no. What I do is I do it, you know, just exactly like the program asked me to in the 5500 to put it in there and put the readout down.
Well, come up and see me. Let's not waste a whole lot of time.
Well, give it with Tom during the break and see why he had a number one and you had a number four.
But not only he was number one, he was number one by a big margin, like 0.40. Out of point, he was like a 1.68 or 1.7 perhaps.
Who do you have number one?
On the class rating?
On the class rating, yeah.
I had 1.42. Yeah, but Sunshine had 1.51, but Tom Willie was scratched, but he had 1.46.
Scratched.
Okay. Dakari had 1.48.
No, he was, I remember that because.
We'll get with that.
Okay.
If you hit the numbers, Tom, show him what.
Maybe there's slight.
Might be something wrong with the program.
Correction to be done. Maybe the program is differential. So let's correct it. Because our overwhelming. And it's funny. Guys who are having problems find that it's not working. Guys who are not having problems find the dynamite. I don't know whether it has something to do with what your finger enters, depending on whether you're positive about it.
Roger,
it's the one thing that should be automatic and you should all get the same horses. There's very little judgment involved.
So it still came in third on yours because when I'm scratching. So the top 5 is overridden. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and Ed will send it to us when he gets a couple hundred more races, and he'll separate turf, route, and sprint. And he'll do it without the fourths and fifths, if that makes any difference. And we'll have ourselves an additional spreadsheet on this factor. I tell you this, Bob Cochran did it in the Chicago area, and Bert Main did it in the New York area. He found an absolute dynamite. I would rather expect that they made some discretionary notes, as Ed did, but not putting in certain horses who would like foreign horses are going to tilt it unless you make that. He's not going to make that distinction and multiply them by six or something. You can put them in or leave them out, knowing full well they would not figure in the class because of some inherent factor in the either the number of races they've had or their earnings or their foreign status or whatever. Calietti, you cannot take Calietti class. In using class, remember that APV designates the level of their class, and the class factor itself determines how well they did at that level.
Now, Calietti horses, it would be...
Yeah, dynamite. Well, I didn't tell you the evidence of that. At Calietti, it's dynamite. It distinguishes those dogs from the lesser dogs. Calietti, believe me, I got my ego on Calietti. We were starting out this thing. I just went down to Miss Kelly, played 12 horses of the 5-10 every weekend, and our record down there was 5-10s and consolations. It was outstanding. That is a very easy track to beat. Those of you who have this thing about I won't play cheap horses, I don't depend on them. You want to go someplace where they're all cheap.
Blue Ribbon Down.
Blue Ribbon Down. I got any class at all at Blue Ribbon Down. Horse comes up, what's my class rating? They're going to send me to the dog factory. You've got a 3.2. Hey, hear that? Don't send me yet. All right, another very powerful aspect of what Tom's been talking about. I want you to make note of the difference now. Be sure you do. For those of you who are getting these huge adjustments, remember, my gosh, it's only 1.3 to 1.43 difference from the bottom to the top. So when you're coming up with an adjustment, you think it's, unless it's a sprint to a route, it's supposed to be 1.39 or 1.78. What you're doing is saying, in effect, that a $10,000 horse can be the stakes horse when you're making these huge adjustments. Notice on Tom's variance service where if he has anything over a 0.90 usually, unless there's a sprint to route or distance change involved, he usually puts a big exclamation or a question mark around it to say, is this true? Most of those adjustments are from 0.15, 0.60, 0.59,
all right. You got a 215 on that. There was one day, you recall it, I didn't make a variance. The track was about 22 long. Yeah.
16 to 18
lengths. Yeah, they had so many lengths. Well, that was in Bay Meadows, but yes, that was a different one. But in Bay Meadows, it was 22 lengths.
So before we leave the subject of the specific horses to watch, now remember when you're talking about horses to watch, you should be making win place bets. You talk about one horse in a race, generally speaking. How often these horses to watch that he's created just from his own list place is phenomenal. So if you bet him win in place, since you're only betting one horse, you're covering that. Yesterday he had a $23 winner, but he also had a $9 horse to watch in place. $9.80. So you make money if you win. Relative to how often they do it in your record keeping, two to one minimum, and probably 4 to 1 place over the win, depending on the size of your bet.
How many horses did you use when you did the statistics for the follow-up?
Which one?
In Tom's horse to watch.
Everyone he put in.
But how many horses is that?
I forget. I started charting it from the day he first published it for our client.
Is that a year ago?
That's 2 years. So and I just kept a running record from the, I got, you know, the, and I got the Herald, so you get the Bay Meadows, Golden Gate, and local results. I just charted their results.
So you're talking like 5 horses for 200 weeks? About 1,000 horses?
It's 600 of one?
Well, 2 years is only 100 weeks.
So whatever it was, that's what it was.
I don't know what his
base was, but for the first few months, there were probably only about three a week.
Yeah, he wasn't doing very much. No, my base was as they came. I just made a little notation. On each one of the ones he sends me, I want to do something with it, so I made a record on it. That's how his horses watch.
Yes, he's trying to find something useful.
Yeah,
I don't know how he handled it, and possibly this is part of it. I, you know, like Mel Air, when she broke her maiden, I put her on as a horse to watch. Well, she won seven straight races, I think.
No, I followed her twice.
Okay.
Followed him twice.
In the mutual, were there a lot of horses that, you know, were there a lot of big winners and then a lot of...
He had a lot of chalk or semi-chalk, $6 to $8 horse, but he would spring up at least once a week with something that was in double digits.
Like Teddy Bear Hug.
That's a nice price.
Teddy Bear Hug
was Valiant Cougar twice over.
Yes, right? Today you could have got Teddy Bear Hug. Well, nothing would have got it and supported this horse to watch on that. And the oddball thing about one of his own clients sent me the race that Teddy Bear Hug won, the problem race that he didn't get. Not only, I didn't know it was, but I didn't correlate the fact he was a horse to watch. I got it for him.
These Bay Meadows horses to watch are all going to Santa Anita.
They are. Got it for him. Yeah. He realized that. He's one of your better clients, too.
Yeah. What would you bet, if you're hitting 60% with one horse bet, why would you bet win and play?
Because he's over 73% win and play.
I'd rather hit 60% win.
Yeah,
well,
for the ROI.
Okay, but wait a minute, who's saying that?
Who's saying what?
You'd rather just take 60% to win?
He's a stock. Yep. He's a projectionist.
Okay. The place price will pay if the horse wins.
I'm not going to argue with that, neither, because that is right. But it depends on you. Well, Howard likes to bet when it plays.
I like to get the best ROI.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I can see that. Now, right now, I have been betting. I've got kind of a nice deal. Somebody's betting a lot of money for me if I give him my selections, right? And I told him, bet it for me, and I can't lose, no matter how bad we do. And we've done very well. But I told him to bet, he's betting $200 per selection that I give him for me, in addition to $2,000 for himself. And he's betting 80, I told him, bet 80 to win and 120 to place on it. And we got a run of, at one streak in here, haven't been doing it that long, but we have one streak in here where we lost 12 or 14 votes. But, and one of those was a disqualification when Donnie Gugger came down, right? He would have paid 16 to win, and he paid 720 to place, but I got 120 to place on it, right? And at that time, I was walking glad we were playing that. It's just your own temperament. And Jim Quinn is saying, you know, if you change that to win betting, you're going to be better off for a long run. Except I'm happy to grind it out. This is free money. But you're right. I mean, when you total it all up, you'll say, I was better to bet it to win. But some people would rather cash more often. I mean, it's just you. So you're absolutely right.
I'm too old for a long run. Now, you're going to say, though, that you will... If I'm going to say, give me 20 to win and 50 to place, and that's going to be what I'm going to bet. I'm not going to bet 70 to win, see. I would bet this way anyway. I would only bet 20. Now I've got the 50 over here. You'd say, oh, the 70 over here, in the long run you make more money, and you're right. But betting this way, I'll go cash a ticket.
There are some other arguments for doing it too, and if you come next month, you'll hear them. For betting two horses and for betting place. Such a concept of the velocity of money. And we'll go into it.
There's a big velocity of money, man. He'll love that, because he'd be able to.
That's not what we're about in the seminar.
Plus, if you read Huey Maul's bit on Dutching the winning place, I tend to do that. I don't want to two bets on the same horse. Wind up Dutching the win and Dutching the place.
To the bold. Now you're not as extreme as some of these people. We have a mutual friend that all of our bets are $14 bets, is they're not getting enough value on them, and he will cash 12 tickets a year and make 200% on his money. And let's say that what he makes in the year is $5,000. He will put a whole lot more money through, but will make $20,000. Well, we don't get as much value as he did, but we can buy five cars if you want. This all depends. If you're putting that money through on winning, and you've got the courage to wait out times when you lose the photos, and you've got the courage to keep that bet at a level when that win, comes, you capitalize it and optimize it, then of course that's the best. And that's why you cannot tailor a man's money management program to the most bold. You must tailor a money management program to the most cautious. And anybody else can really augment it according to his boldness.
I want to talk about the velocity of money. I went to the study at Bay Meadows over about 200 or 300 races. Take the top four factor W horses and bet anything over 4-1 with a 25% return. But because you were making so many bets, return was phenomenal.
Oh, man.
There are a lot of people who can make money, multiple Dutch, more than
just flat bet everything over 4-1.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, see, that was the trick behind the My Virginia Real Mousie Any Song race the other night. See, Any Song with the matching numbers is even money, and the other two were 5-1 to 7.
Okay.
So they're for the top three back to W. So why bet Any Song in that situation? Because she didn't have that big an edge. But, that's a good way of playing all year long.
Okay, Tom's final part of his formal presentation has to do with understanding the bias and seeing what horses do against the bias, and then being able to pinpoint those horses to watch when the bias changes back. After you do this race, this is an exercise where there's found something very interesting about the race. Do the percentage early, pace of the race on these races. Do the percentage early on your little pace of the horse on these races. Don't let it doing it interfere with listening to Tom, but you find out something very, very interesting that points out to you.
Well, this isn't all that formal a presentation because I didn't have to work hard.
Well, I meant that, okay. If you didn't have to shut up, that you can't leave after you finish. You'll have to participate. I'll participate in your criticisms.
The Wit and Wisdom of Tom Brohammer,
yeah.
The world's smallest book, you got it. We're not quite ready to go to the bias sheets yet. Go to page 3. Now on page 3 and 4, I've already done the variance for you. This is the byproduct of having gone through that exercise that we did earlier, right? And